This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. After a divisive election season and lots of changes in the federal government, groups across the country have continued to demonstrate and speak out about their concerns. One group in the La Crosse area has turned to theater as a way to talk about national policy changes. Joining us today to talk about the Alternative Truth Project are Greg Parmeter, theater professor at the University of Wisconsin La Crosse, Anne Drechtraw, local theater director, and Wendy Madison, drama residency artist. And Anne, you know, first, can you just talk a little bit about, you know, what the Alternative Truth Project is?
Yes, it came out of my viewing on TV Donald Trump's first victory tour in Ohio, and I was listening to it and watching it, and I was terrified by the amount of vitriol shown in the audience. Terrified. And I thought, I need to find something, we as artists need to find something to do about that, a way to address what's going on in the country. I got together with my partners, Susan Fox and Diane Breezer, who the three of us coordinated last September the Concert Across America to End Gun Violence. And I said, I have our next project, and I want to do a series of play readings of political plays, one a month in different venues around town. And I said, we need a title. And Susan Fox instantly came up with the Alternative Truth Project. So that's how it came about over coffee.
Yeah, and can you talk a little bit more about the title, Alternative Truth? And I wonder if it has anything to do with, you know, alternative facts.
Yeah, pretty much. You right on the head. Yes, that had a whole unbelievable statement from Kellyanne Conway had just come out maybe a week before when she said, well, he was talking about alternative facts. And Susan came up with it right on the spur of the moment. And we thought it would be a good way to juxtapose and those two concepts. And hopefully people would go, oh, that's kind of amusing. How clever.
Yeah, and Greg, can you talk a little bit about, you know, what you guys are hoping to achieve by doing these readings of plays?
We're hoping to achieve what we generally hope to achieve as artists, which is to inspire dialogue, to inspire discussion, and ultimately to inspire change. As artists, especially actors and directors, we can deal with large concepts and make them personal and not argue what the logic of an argument is, which is a lot of what we see happening is you know, the difference between facts and truth and lies and spinning. And what we do is we deal with these big, large concepts on a very small level. Because once you begin to care about a personal story of a person, what they're dealing with, what they're going through, it opens up your world to a whole new plethora of possibilities of how to see things around you. So hopefully, by getting people together in a room and looking at plays that deal with these kinds of issues that we're dealing with now in a very personal story level, people will maybe start to see the world a little bit differently, start to see the danger of the things that the Trump administration and others are doing. It is a threat to our way of life as Americans. It is a threat to our way of life as artists and as human beings. So by presenting, you know, plays that they give us an opportunity to view that in a different way, we're hoping to inspire people to look at things differently, not through the prism of politics or policy or ideology, but through the prism of our common humanity.
Yeah, and can you talk a little bit about, you know, how you guys are kind of evaluating which plays to select for this project? Oh, and yeah.
And then Greg can add on to this.
Of course.
I immediately thought of three or four plays that I wanted to do, and I put it on Facebook and asked all my friends to give me suggestions for plays, and the response was overwhelming. And people like Wendy and Greg and so many other artists in the community said, I want to be part of it. And they all suggested plays. And I picked the three I'm going to do, and it's up to the other directors to pick the plays, so I can put that one back to Greg now.
it is working on the idea of the artist collective, everyone getting together and saying, here's a play that has something to say about what we're dealing with. And the first one that that rang my bell was one of the first ones that, Anne proposed, which was Rhinoceros, because it is very much a play pulled directly from history and from people who saw the rise of fascism in Europe firsthand, and an ability to really get to the heart of the same things we're seeing now. But the idea is to share our experiences and our ideas together to say, okay, here's a play that has something to say about what's happening right now. And we want to be careful not to lock in too far in advance, because we do want to be fluid and flexible for, you know, new things that pop up. And every day there's something new that pops up. And you know, so it opens up a whole new line of thinking and a whole new line of plays and literature that we can take a look at.
So the idea is to be responsive to current events and issues as they kind of pop up.
Beth Cherney, another professor at the university at UWL, said, oh, well, what about Emperor's New Clothes? And I thought, well, why didn't I think of that? So that's the first one that I did, and Greg did Rhinoceros on the same night. But I think it's fabulous to have so many friends who you can count on to perform quality work, and you can just say, whatever you'd like to do, please do it. Here's the list of people you have to choose from. And we're doing it at different venues, too.
Yeah, and what's kind of the motivation to making sure that you're visiting different venues in the La Crosse area?
Because I work mostly at the Pump House, and right now Greg works at the university, before that at the community theater, I thought it would be really good to get other venues so that people who might not know to come to the Pump House, the next one is going to be at the Universal Unitarian Church. Did I say that right?
Mm-hmm.
On West Avenue, Diane Breezer will be doing Inherit the Wind. And then I think in May we're going to be at the Congregational Church, and Beth Cherney is going to be doing a show. And then I'm back at the Pump House. And then that's all we got scheduled so far.
And Wendy, I wonder, as you know, as an artist, what kind of drew you to, you know, working on this project?
It really had to do with the work that I have done over the last 20 years in the public schools. Both Anne and Greg have worked in formal theater, and I have worked in informal theater within the classroom. And I've done this in elementary schools and also middle schools. And I want to go back to what Greg had said earlier about really looking at this project as a means of facilitating dialogue. That really has been the impetus behind the work that I have done in public schools. And as I was reflecting upon this conversation, I went back to remember one of the individuals who really impacted my work, and his name is Paolo Ferrari. And he was doing a lot of work in education and sociology in Brazil, and later in Chile. And with this work, he was working with people in poverty, and he was trying to find ways to give voice to them. He saw that people who were in poverty were oppressed and did not have forums in which they could really feel comfortable giving voice to themselves. And he called this the culture of silence. He said that this was due to leaders who would tell individuals what it was that they should believe. And in some of our educational systems, we still have this. It's called the banking system, in which you look at individuals who are seen as empty vessels, in which the leader or the the king or whoever is in power deposits information into those empty vessels and expects those individuals to follow course based upon what is stated. What Paolo Ferrari was saying is that we really need to look at what is the reality of individuals who live in different parts of the world. And his voice really rang not only to those who are in poverty, but to those of us who live in middle class and upper class societies here, really in the United States and all across the world. And so the work that we did in the schools was looking at creating forums, using theater devices, oftentimes not scripted, but we could create our own script based upon what we discovered. And then from that work that we did, engaging every individual, valuing every individual, and trying to find ways to help them to give voice to their sense of what reality was. So what happened is he used three different steps in his work. The first one was dialogue. And what we're doing here is we're using theater as a dialogue. And then what we do is we step back and take on the second step. That is reflection. What is it that we saw? What was revealed to us? And the third step is action. Based upon what it is that we learned, what do we need to do to act upon our new understanding? And so when this work came out with Anne and Greg and Susan and Diane, I thought, well, this is going to be another step into really looking at using theater as an educational tool, as well as an artistic tool. So that is what drew me into this particular work.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about the Alternative Truth Project, a new group that's using theater to express their thoughts on recent changes in government. We're here with Wendy Madison, drama residency artist, Greg Parmeter from UWL, and local theater director Anne Drechtraw. And, you know, Wendy, you're talking about kind of these three steps of using dialogue and how theater's kind of filling that role. But, you know, Greg, I wonder if you have thoughts on how the Alternative Truth Project is kind of looking at these, you know, the next steps of reflection and action based on, you know, the works that you guys are featuring.
I think one of the most important things that we're doing with the project is engagement with the audience at the completion of every event, because it takes us from just a situation of lecture to true engagement. Theater is best done when it is done communally. It is best done when it engages the audience in what it does. And so we have a unique opportunity to open up lines of discussion with the audience. And hopefully what that does is require people to leave the theater and reflect upon their own views and what they've heard. The only way to really expand your worldview is to hear what others have to say, and not just listen to respond, but actually hear and take it in. And so when we do stage these things, getting the audience involved to discuss what they've seen and what they've heard and what their feelings are and what their thoughts are a critical point of creating that change. Because change can only happen when there is dialogue and when there is, as Wendy said, reflection about what that dialogue means. So we're very careful to make sure that we know, or we let people know, that these are open forums. We want to invite those in who have different points of view, different beliefs, different fears, and different hopes even. Because by getting people together to discuss and to talk, understanding can be reached, or at least that's what we hope.
Yeah, Anne, and can you talk a little bit more about how you guys are hoping to, I guess, engage the public and kind of reach out? You know, it sounds like a lot of the local theater, you know, kind of community has come together behind this project. But I wonder, you know, how you guys are hoping to kind of engage others.
To add on to what Greg was saying, the performances, the readings are free and at different venues, so that we can hopefully, people who might not go to see a full production and have to spend money, we can invite them in to see and hear something that might spur further conversation about whatever the play said to them. So that's why we're trying really hard to go to different venues and make it completely free so that people don't have to worry about spending money. And again, we want to invite people with different points of view to come to these readings.
I'd like to take on to that.
Yeah, because, Wendy.
I think that is important. In the first reading that we had, it seemed as if the audience members were more moderate to liberal. And so when I reflected upon the work and I was looking at, you know, how did this go? You know, what did we learn from this? What is it that we need to look at as we move forward? I think it would be so beneficial to find more ways to invite people in who have different points of view and to work strategically at creating a safe environment for those views to be expressed. Because the interesting thing that came out to me in when we were looking at discussing rhinoceros is that so many of us are stuck in our own camp, so to speak, but wanting to find that avenue or that pathway to look at trying to understand someone else's point of view. The other part that comes in there that shakes us up is the fact that each one of us has our own, call it a sacred line, or that place that we can't cross, because ethically we do not want to normalize certain kinds of things. I don't think any one of us wants to normalize lying. And we've been shaken up as a community of people and as a country, because it has been alarming the degree to which falsehoods have been stated. So how do we begin to have a dialogue with others who believe differently than us, you know, or let's say differently than me, as far as government structures? How do we begin to have conversations about such a basic idea as truth? I don't think we've been put into this place before. And I think that this potentially could be a safe forum to begin to bring people together who have different points of view, who can begin to talk about that. The alternative is to allow the politicians from Washington, D.C., to separate us into the winners and losers, to separate us into the us and them. And that, as citizens of these United States, I do not believe that we can allow that to happen. So we've got to work from our communities to look at pulling ourselves together and looking at finding those common lines. And they're there. I just don't think we have articulated them because of fear.
Wendy, I think you bring up an interesting idea of that. You know, for some feel that this is a new place, this idea of kind of alternative truth, you know, is kind of a new concept and a new, for some people, is alarming. You know, but I wonder if you think that people have always kind of had their own version of the truth, or I don't know what your thoughts are on that. Or Greg,
you know. I'm not a philosopher, but I'm fairly certain the philosophers would tell you, and I think we could all agree with this, truth is subjective to your experiences, what you've seen, what you've experienced, what you've done, and what has happened to you, people of different political stripe, different beliefs, different religions. That's one of the beauties of the American experiment, is that these differences can live together and coexist successfully. What we are dealing with is something completely and totally abnormal and unusual for American society, and that is the complete and total abandonment of fact and reason and this sense of retreating to what is comfortable and what you think the easy answer is without any sort of acknowledgement of what really is going on. It's the disrespect of education. It's the destruction of the sciences. It is the complete and total denial that there is objective fact that has to be addressed. I can deal with somebody whose truth is different than mine. In fact, I do. I come from a very conservative household. I come from a very conservative state. I'm originally from South Dakota. So, you know, I understand what the appeal of conservative politics are. And I do believe that true conservative politics has an important and vital place within the American conversation. We are not dealing with conservative politics anymore. We are dealing with a political ideology of a completely different stripe. And it is a threat to American democracy. It is a threat to the safety of the republic. It is a threat to the safety of individuals. So truth can be subjective. Fact cannot.
Looking back through history, I think there's always been, you know, political dissonance and times of political dissonance and, you know, people turning to the arts, to theater, as a way to have social commentary and political commentary. And, you know, Anne, I wonder if you can talk a little bit about, you know, how that political and social commentary of, you know, previous eras is and that has been expressed through theater is kind of, I don't know, becoming relevant again.
Well, we go back to Lysistrata.
To the Greeks.
That's right.
To the Greeks, where the women said, you guys want to go to war? Okay, you don't get to sleep with us until you come back from the war. Where, you know, it was the first, like, feminist play, really. Though it was done by all men back then. But there you are. And Shakespeare, so much of Shakespeare is politically oriented. Now, Shakespeare had to make, like Richard III, he had to please Queen Elizabeth on that one because she was paying the checks. So he bent the truth a little in Richard III, but it was still a very political play. Restoration comedy pokes fun at the social mores of the upper class and shows what an artificial class they lived in. She stoops to conquer the rivals, those. Okay, then we go to realism. Ibsen, we can get to expression. Realism. Ibsen took on very weighty subjects, like Enemy of the People, which was about a man who dares to speak out in his community about pollution, to name one of the Ibsen plays. Rhinoceros comes out of the 50s. I have to go back to the 30s, Waiting for Lefty, and Cradle Will Rock. The Cradle Will Rock are all pro-labor plays that the people could come to and understand how important it was to stand up for the rights of the working class, which we are now going through again. Though our president says he's going to help the working class, everything that he has showed so far is diametrically opposed to that statement that he made. And so then you get to the 30s. Then we go to the 50s during the Red Scare, during the McCarthy era, and you get Watch on the Rhine and with another play from the 50s that talks about...
The Crucible.
The Crucible.
Is absolutely vital to that conversation.
And it brings, and it, again, opens the window for people to sit in a play, especially if it's free, and go, oh. I mean, that's what we always hope to do as artists, is to make you take a look at yourself through what we're presenting to you. In the 60s, so many plays, America Hurrah. I'm doing a play called The Chicago Conspiracy Trial, which is about the trial, the ridiculous trial of the Chicago Eight after the 1968 Democratic Convention, Abby Hoffman, Rennie Davis, Tom Hayden, Bobby Seale. And it is taken directly from the trial transcript. And you read it and you go, oh, why do we have to go back to this? That's, I think, the other thing that I'm so willing to do but didn't think I would have to, is to go back and address issues that we fought so hard for in the 60s. Gay rights, women's rights, unions, civil rights, all the things that we took to the streets for back then, anti-war. We're back where we started. As Wendy's son-in-law said, we were on the verge of an America that we were hoping for. And then this election happened. And we have taken 17 gigantic steps back. Did I hit everything? Did I hit all the eras?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, Greg, I wonder what your thoughts are on, you know, like, how this project is really, I guess, also maybe exploring the cyclical nature of history and how, you know, a lot of the issues that are addressed through these plays are really relevant now.
You know, the greatest theater is the kind that is always relevant because they're about human stories and human struggles. And history is cyclical. You know, there's the old joke that or the old cliche that those who do not know their history are doomed to repeat it. I think right now we're dealing with a situation where those of us who do know our history are standing helplessly by while other people are forcing us to repeat it. But theater deals with human stories, and the human condition remains the same. There will always be somebody who is out there wanting to take the rights from somebody else because they do not like them, or they do not agree with them, or because they are afraid of them. There are always people who are going to be fleeing horrible acts of violence and horrible war, looking for safety. These are not new ideas. These are ideas that we see throughout history. And so the question is, at what point do we have to stop fighting the same battles and start moving on to other things? And that's what's most frustrating, I think, for me and for a lot of people involved in this project, is it, you know, it feels like the conversation has been moved back to what we already thought was decided policy, decided, you know, truth. And by doing this, I think as much as anything, we're pointing out that we have taken a step back. And this is why we're choosing work that comes from our past. Because it is that idea that we've seen this before, we've done this before, why are we doing it again, and why have we forgotten? We sometimes have a very short memory. And a lot of times we become complacent. We see an achievement and we move on to the next thing instead of reminding ourselves what we had to do to make those strides and those achievements.
UWL Theater Professor Greg Parmeter is here with us today to talk about the Alternative Truth Project, a group in the La Crosse area using theater to talk about current issues in the federal government. He's joined by Anne Drechtra, a local theater director, and Wendy Madison, a drama residency artist. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation about the arts and social and political commentary. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. 2017 has been marked by demonstrations sparked by federal policy changes, from the Women's March in Washington to protests in airports after President Donald Trump's immigration ban. In the La Crosse area, one group is turning to theater to talk about national political debates. Joining us to talk about the Alternative Truth Project are Greg Parmeter, theater professor at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, Anne Drechtra, local theater director, and Wendy Madison, drama residency artist. And we've, you know, talked a little bit about or alluded to your guys' first kind of reading of plays. And so, Anne, can you talk a little bit more about, you know, when the first reading happened and kind of, you know, what was the turnout? What was the response?
It was at the Pump House. It was on the 23rd. I was not surprised by the turnout because I had talked to so many people. I think we had maybe 10 or 15 empty seats out of 145. I had talked to so many people who were so excited about this and so willing to be part of it and to bring people in. So I was not surprised by the turnout. I was surprised by the discussion, which I learned very quickly I should not lead, which Wendy should lead. I'm used to these kind of polite little discussions after plays where you expect people to say to you, and what did you as a director learn from this? Or what did, and to one of the actors, how was it working on that character? No, not so much with this group. It was great to be part of, but it needed to be more focused, which is what we're going to try to do to address the things that Wendy was talking about. to not just make it a, I want to talk about what I believe and go back and forth, which was interesting. And we did get several different voices in the audience speaking about what they were worried about, what they thought should happen. But if we can focus on being more, tying the discussion to what the play was about, what specific issues were presented in the play. We're asking for donations at every reading because we'd like to give a stipend to each venue for allowing us to do this for the most part free, and we're paying for all the licenses just to keep us legal. Greg?
Yeah, the first one shocked me. Because we did have this great turnout. I was one of those that was surprised. I was like, oh wow, okay, people are actually into this, which was very heartening. What surprised me, and it shocked me a little bit, was despite the fact that most of the people who showed up were all very much within the same ideological, you know, avenue, how many different opinions there were and how tense the conversation got, and it was like, oh my goodness, if we can't come to a conclusion on a simple matter, it's no wonder that we feel so overwhelmed and helpless about the larger issues. And unfortunately, what we didn't have in that first engagement was anybody who was not of that liberal, progressive sort of avenue. There weren't any conservatives in the group. And I think the conversation was lesser because of that, because then we were forced to suppose what the other side would say or believe instead of actually engaging. So in the future, I would like to see a more focused sort of attempt to garner those different opinions and viewpoints. Because I think discussion is valuable. I don't know if discussion for its own end is valuable, which is why I think it is important to have a specific question or issue to deal with.
Yeah, Wendy, I wonder what your thoughts are on, you know, how you keep this project and keep these events from just kind of being an airing of grievances and just kind of, you know, a complaining session. And you know, how do you hope to make this project more of a fruitful, you know, mm-hmm. kind of dialogue?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I'd like to say that it's always interesting when you throw out, you know, when you have your first dialogue. And that tells you something. And part of me says that's okay because it shows you what the raw sense is in the room. And it was very surreal in the way that many of us are feeling that life is today. Things were coming from so many different directions. And for those of us who were in the room, I think we were trying to look for a through line, but there wasn't a through line because people were responding to the work and to the reactions of other people in so many different ways. So when I reflected upon it, I agree with Greg in the sense that what I was missing was the voice of those who would reflect the opposite opinion. And then, of course, the question comes is, how do we make that happen? So we need to look at how do we create a safe environment for dialogue? What are the rules of engagement, so to speak, that we create that doesn't stifle dialogue, but allows people to feel comfortable stating their point of view? Because I did feel very strongly afterwards when I spoke with people that many are yearning to sit down and honestly try to understand and connect, as we were talking about earlier. So that's one thing right there, creating a safe environment. The other is understanding that any art form can be a new experience for people. So for people who are outside of theater or outside of visual arts or dance or whatever it might be, we need to have guidance as far as how to look at something. And so when Greg talks about questions or framing it, For example, we're going to be looking at Inherit the Wind. Well, when you look at the fact that it's a fictitious story because it's based upon the Scopes trial back in 1925, when you're looking at Darwin's theory of evolution and then the religious point of view with regarding to the big, the creation story, you know, how do we actually look at helping people understand how to look at this through the eyes of an artist? So I think that giving some thought as to what is the information that needs to be given up front just to help people understand this. In this last play, Greg did give just an excellent overview of where this play came from, and I think that that was very helpful in helping people understand at least a part of this play. But I think that we need to look at very carefully how to frame it and come up with what I would suggest three key questions. When you are looking at this play, you might want to look at this, this, and this. And that may be helpful in looking at guiding individuals into looking at what to look at. And the other way of helping the audience understand this is to maybe have two people who are prepared to give a reflection of the piece so that we understand how to do that. You know, what is it that you look at? I just love listening to people who are in formal theater and artists. I love to hear their point of view and what it is that they see in the play that quite, you know, might have gone completely over my head. But that that model is helpful. And I think that we can look at those kinds of things, which would then, I think, engage people at levels that I think would be more helpful for all of us and would also bring a sense of safety.
And have you received any negative feedback to this project so far?
Yes. We have a website that Diane and Jennifer Dodson, who helped her put together the Facebook page, rather, called the Alternative Truth Project. And apparently a gentleman took umbrage to what we were doing. Diane said, oh, my goodness. And I said, well, let me look at it because I think I have a way of posting something to him that will maybe make him be a little more civil. And I wanted to say, this is our project. We would love you. This is our point of view and our project. We would love you to do your own project based on your point of view, but this is our point of view, and you're being bigoted and intolerant is one of the reasons that we're doing this. So we would like you to come to this, and we would also like you to perhaps do your own project. By the time I got there, someone had deleted them all. And that's the only negative that I've had been told about. Now, I didn't, we had a nice article in the Tribune. I didn't go online to see what people had commented on about that. Did you?
No, I've learned an experience to avoid that, but I have heard from other folks some of the comments were less than supportive.
But again, we then, fine, but we invite you. That's what a dialogue is all about. We would love to see what you would come up with for a project of this.
We invite dialogue. We invite other points of view. But there's a difference between expressing your point of view and abuse. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of kickback that I think artists get for expressing their point of view is really awful, and you think back to Meryl Streep and speaking out and being so viciously attacked, and any other actor or artist that has seen fit to open their mouth,
Alec Baldwin,
and others have been absolutely destroyed, and so that sticks in my craw very much, simply because as an artist I'm tired of being told that you're just an actor. And what do you know? Despite the fact that, you know, acting is a profession that demands research. It demands that you know about your subject, and it demands that you know about the world around you.
And so to tell these people that they have no right to speak out or be involved in politics, I think is, well, it's horribly un-American, but it's also very badly informed about how actors really do go about their business and their careers, especially when you're talking about somebody who is as highly educated as Meryl Streep, and she is highly educated, more so than the current president, I might add. To call us ignorant and say that we, you know, should keep our mouths shut and stick to what we do, well, this is what we do. And so, you know, we can invite dialogue, but abuse should have no place in dialogue. But hi, welcome to 2017, in which abuse is your primary form of dialogue with the current administration.
I was thinking the other day, it was Sunday, and they were talking, some program was talking about this has been 45 days only. And I went, oh, yeah, that's right. I thought it had been 4 years already, because the lack of taking responsibility for your own actions comes at us so fast and furiously from the president, who never takes responsibility for any statement he makes that is absolutely found to be true, to be false. Even his electoral votes. When the reporter pointed out to him that the facts he had given, he had won by the most electoral votes. The reporter pointed out to him that Bush and Reagan and Obama, and I was talking about Republicans. And he pointed out the examples, and the president said, oh, I was given that information. I don't believe I can. One of the things that you learn to do as an adult is accept responsibility for your actions. And I'm appalled that the person in charge of this country has not taken responsibility for one action that he has set in motion.
Yeah, Wendy.
Well, it gets back to rules of engagement. I look back at how, when we grew up and we were listening to the leaders in our country, there really were not any written rules of engagement. It just, you know, we saw through their modeling how people addressed one another. And when I work in classrooms, there have been, sometimes I have stepped into classrooms in which there have been forums created in which it's been very clear that those rules of engagement have not been stated and that students are flying all over the place. But when they are, when it is clear what the culture of learning is, what the culture of respectful dialogue is, then we can really take some steps into looking at these issues that we're talking about. What does it mean to be human? What is truth? What is fact? How do we really look at viewing the world? When are we being moved? When are we being manipulated into seeing things in ways that really are not true? So I see the one of the tests that we really have here in this project is looking at revisiting rules of engagement, because what is being modeled at the top level of our government is not what we would consider respectful rules of engagement. And in a classroom that I would be in, any kind of dialogue that is reflective of what's happening in the White House would not be acceptable. So it is from the very basic level of how we communicate, we are being jarred.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about the Alternative Truth Project, a new group who uses theater to express their thoughts on recent changes in government. We're here with Wendy Mattson, drama residency artist, Greg Parmeter from UWL, and local director Anne Drechtraw. So we've been talking about the first reading that the Alternative Truth Project has had. And, you know, Greg, can you provide some information on the next reading you guys are planning to do?
Actually, I think Anne might be the better person to answer that question.
Diane Breezer is going to do, as Wendy said, Inherit the Wind, which is about, based on an actual trial from 1925, about, Wendy alluded to it a little bit, about the conflict between church and state, which has come roaring back into the news now, and the teaching of science versus the teaching of creationism in public schools. Wendy, Diane has, that will be on the 31st of the of March, of March at the Universal Unitarian Church at 7:30. It looks at, again, the basic things that are taught in education. Do you go with science? Do you go with religion? There is a place for both. Public schools, in my opinion, should not be forced to teach creationism. Science is science. Religion is religion. They complement each other, but if it's a public school, it should be fact-based. Do you have anything to add, Wendy, on that?
No, that was, I think that says it all.
You know, and earlier we were talking about the plays that you guys are selecting from previous eras that, you know, have been inspired by, you know, kind of political dissonance and the social commentary. And Greg, I wonder what your thoughts are on how this time period that we're currently in will mean for the future of theater and kind of performance art. How do you think this era of our history will inspire artists?
I think we are in the midst of one of the greatest periods of theatrical development. And you know, for a lot of people, theater stops at like 1970. Once Rodgers and Hammerstein sort of, you know, stop, that a lot of people are comfortable to say, okay, good, that's where we are. And, you know, people look back to past eras with Shakespeare and the Greeks and say, well, that was the great era of theater. I think we're living in the great era of theater because for the first time, and probably in my lifetime, theater is now part of the national conversation in a way that it hasn't been in a very long time. And we're looking at you know, works particularly Hamilton, which I think is a bellwether in society for what theater seeks to do. I think it is going to inspire artists of different voices. It's going to inspire artists of different backgrounds, of genders, experiences, to create something that is uniquely American. And so we're living in the great age of theater now. And I do believe that great work will come out of the next 4 years, if nothing else. But theater also is starting to come into its own and understanding what its place in society is. And so even the most commercial of work that is being done on the big stages in Broadway still has that human element and that social conscience to it that we haven't always seen in theater when it's been viewed as just mass entertainment. Theater on even the business side is starting to move towards this period of great social commentary and engagement. And I think nothing could be better for us. So,
yeah, and Anne.
I think it also shows what our country looks like. Speaking to what Greg was saying, more and more theater is being done gender neutral, where we just saw King Lear. France, who's a character, you never really hear his name, was played by a woman, an African-American woman. Hamilton obviously has gender neutral or colorblind casting, as we call it. We used to call it colorblind casting, Now it's gender neutral.
Yeah, it's very neutral. In fact, they're hoping to do, you know, future productions in which women can play the men's roles and things like that.
So we're trying to do that too, where possible, in just our readings. If we... I know the judge in Inherit the Wind is being played by a woman now, that Diane is doing. And
the act of doing this, the act of having something that is gender neutral, really helps us to see, to gain a wider perspective. So when we look at how we have begun to think the way we do, you know, why is it that I have this opinion versus this opinion? I think that when we talk about stepping back or that we have been pulled back, I think that this is one of the things that we're being asked to do, is to look at how do we think? How do we view the world? And can we use theater or any other art form to begin to look at an event or a belief system from another point of view. And that's the value of the arts. When you take a play or you take an art form and you put it in the center of the audience and have people view that from their own reality, and we listen to that, we begin to oftentimes shift. And I find that often very interesting when you enter into a space. What is it that I believed when I came in? Now that I have seen this and I've heard the voices of other people react to this, where is that shift? And articulating that shift is as important as articulating one's point of view, because that tells us that we can begin to see things in a more maybe honest, real way. It can be confusing too, but I think if we give voice to that confusion, that too is very helpful.
We've been talking with Wendy Mattson, drama residency artist, UWL Theater Professor Greg Parmeter, and local director Anne Drektra, about the Alternative Truth Project, a new group in the La Crosse area using theater to discuss recent national policy debates. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.